Hare Krishna. Good morning, devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Today is Saturday, so we will speak from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and we'll chant a little bit afterwards. I'm going to read the next verse, and then I'm going to go back a little bit. Discuss some of the points that we only briefly discussed in our last class. There are, as I mentioned in our last class, there's a lot more details and that I didn't give then, and I'll try to cover some of those details today, and then put it all into perspective. So we're reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, text 173. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'm going to read the Sanskrit today. Bhakti prabhavena vichara jaitai sanjayamanena sadhijashastvam vignati vignan kila jaya siha savatrate hantavayam sahaya. By the power of bhakti, you will have many realizations time and again, and for certain, you will conquer your most formidable obstacles. In all circumstances, be assured, we are your helpers. Commentary: since devotees may have to endure formidable tests while practicing Nam Sankirtan, Gopakumar may doubt his own fitness to take up the process. The visitors from Vaikuntha assure him, therefore, that he should not be doubtful and hesitant, but should begin Nam Sankirtan with all confidence. If he is worried that he cannot expect to succeed without the blessings of pure devotees, he should rest assured that the Vaikuntha Dutas will always be there to help him wherever he goes. If he needs to understand anything philosophically or has any difficulties to overcome, they will give him the support he needs. Omagyana timiranda syagananjana salakaya chakshu unmanitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha hukam karoti vachalam bhangam dangayate garim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurandina taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari Pastachade Sitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vaikuntha Dutas, continuing their instructions to Gopakumar. And the last several verses were specifically related to the how a devotee overcomes the prarabdha karma or the reactions due to past activities, and we also explained reactions due to past activities, also anarthas which arise due to offenses, anarthas that arise due to bhakti. We gave the different sources of the different anarthas, and we spoke about the example specifically about Bharata Maharaj, and how that Bharata Maharaj accepted the consequences of bad association in order to show an example of how one has to be careful about association. And then the Vaikuntha Dutas went on to give evidence of other personalities who were in similar situations, and that they also faced obstacles due to some bad association or apparent bad behavior, and there were consequences. And they were also used as examples of how some personalities may accept these consequences voluntarily for the sake of teaching, and also sometimes, as in the case of Bharata Maharaj, case of Yudhisthira Maharaj, it was ordained by the will of the Lord to teach that consequences that come from bad association. And in this verse is giving an assurance by the Vaikuntha Dutas that because you have bhakti and by the strength of your bhakti, you will have many realizations, and you'll be able to conquer over the most formidable obstacles. And in the next verse, the Vaikuntha Dutas, we're not going to go there. I'm not going to read that verse yet, but it's just in the next verse. The Vaikuntha Dutas are going to give an example of an obstacle that, a potential obstacle, that Gopakumar himself confronted when he was on Tapaloka. That potential obstacle that he confronted there and overcame it on the strength of his determination of bhakti, is that he was being attempted and allured by Pipalaya Rishi to accept the fact that, in the eyes of Pipalaya Rishi, that it's much better to see the Lord through meditation in your heart than to see him directly in person. So that was considered an obstacle, and Vaikuntha Dutas are going to say this in the next verse, that just see the evidence, don't worry, because they probably saw in Gopakumara some, after hearing about these different examples of Bharat Maharaj and Salbhari Rishi, Salbhari Rishi was given in the commentary by Sanatana Goswami. King Riga was given by the Vaikuntha Dutas. Yudhisthira Maharaj was also given an example by the Vaikuntha Dutas. And he was probably thinking, well, if these personalities confronted obstacles and their teaching by their example what obstacles to avoid, then he was probably feeling, and indicated by this verse today, a little bit hesitant by saying that, what hope is there for me? As the purport says, since many devotees have to endure formidable tests while practicing Nam Sankirtan, Gopakumar may doubt his own fitness to take up the process. So, obviously, the Vaikuntha Dutas observed some doubt, and therefore they tried to give him some assurance. Don't worry, your realizations will continue to reveal to you the superiority of your pursuit. And if you have any doubts about your own strength, don't worry. We're here to help you. So now I wanted to go back, although we'll come back to this. I wanted to go back and to discuss some of the details of the examples which were given by Sanatan Goswami, both in the verse itself and in his commentary about other personalities, because there are a lot of details that are given in the Bhagavatam, also given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentaries to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, there is one example which is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to a Bhagavad Gita verse, which gives evidence to the effect that these personalities also displayed examples in order to teach how somebody who's aspiring on the transcendental path should be very careful about one, bad association. Sabri Muni not only taught bad association, or let's call it complicated association. Sabri Muni, as a result of an offense that he committed to Garuda, he actually developed an attraction within his heart, even though he has been meditating within the water for 10,000 years. He developed an attraction to associate in married life, and not only to associate in married life, but he ended up marrying 50 daughters of King Mandhata, and there's an explanation of how that happened to him. And not only did he become attracted to the association of the wives, but he became very much attracted to the enjoyment of the various opulences which he was able to obtain as a result of his position. And so he's going to show what happens both by an aparad or an offense that he committed to Garuda. And the other example is King Riga. King Riga was what happened to him when he apparently took the possession of a property which belonged to a Brahmin. Now, of course, King Nriga's example is very important because the example was shown to many of the sons of the Yadavas, who are all members of the Yadu dynasty, who are all great kings, and Krishna wanted to teach them by an example what consequences a king will confront if a king usurps the property of Brahmins. And therefore, that has to be taken into consideration, although, of course, it applies to everyone. And we should also be careful to not even inadvertently take possession of that which belongs to a Brahmin, because Krishna is going to describe some very significantly serious consequences that happen to anyone who takes the property of a Brahmin, either inadvertently or, which is even worse, intentionally, forcefully taking something from a Brahmin. So I wanted to speak about these examples and also give some evidence, as I said, from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We'll take first the case of Salbhari Rishi. Salbhari Rishi is a very detailed story of what happened to him in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I was looking for evidence because he's often used as an example as a yogi who fell from his position because he was a yogi and he was not not engaged in devotional service. He's oftentimes used as that example, Salbhavirishi. Just see what happens to somebody who's not sufficiently or adequately absorbed and sheltered in meditation on the form, qualities, pastimes, and service of the Lord. Then even a slight discrepancy, such as apparently seeing two fish copulating in the water, evoked within him a very strong desire for family life. And therefore, I was looking for evidence. There was not a lot of it, because most times the evidence is given is that he was a yogi, and he did fall from that position, and there was no real higher principle which was governing his behavior. But I did find something from Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the Bhagavad Gita, in his commentary. And I wanted to read that first before I go into all the details of Salbhavirishi, because there are quite a few details in that particular story. And this is in a commentary from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. Verse 41, commonly quoted verse, Prapya Punya Kritam Lokan Usitva Sasvati Sama Suchi Nam Shimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Pujayate. And the translation, the unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. And from Sarartha Varshini commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it states, what is the destination of persons who deviate from the path of yoga? In answer to this, Sri Bhagavan says that they reside on the planets that are attained by pious persons who perform yajnas such as the Ashvamedha yajna. Since both enjoyment and liberation are the results of yoga, the yogis who have not yet matured in their practice and who have fallen because of a desire to enjoy only attain enjoyment. In other words, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says there's two categories. One category is somebody who's engaged in yoga for a short period of time. And another category, which is going to go on to explain, is somebody who's engaged in yoga practice for a long period of time. So somebody who's engaged in a short period of time, he will get enjoyment, which is, he'll go to a planet of the pious, and he'll enjoy the results of his yoga practices. And he says, since both enjoyment and liberation are the results of yoga, the yogis who have not yet matured in their practice and who have fallen because of a desire to enjoy only attain enjoyment. On the other hand, since it is impossible for matured yogis to desire enjoyment, they certainly attain liberation if by the will of providence, A mature yogi does develop a desire to enjoy. He also can attain enjoyment like Kardama and Salbari Rishis. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is in this commentary to this verse saying that Salbari Rishi falls into the platform of somebody who, I mean, mature mystic yogi, 10,000 years meditating underwater. And therefore, certainly, as he also explains, one can get both enjoyment and liberation. Certainly, liberation would have been something that Salbari Rishi would have qualified himself as a result of his many years of austerities and yogic practices under the water. But as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Salbari Rishi, well, first, I think we should go a little bit before that. Before that, it's described in the Bhagavatam that in the story of Kaliya, Kaliya and Garuda, it's described that Kaliya was a serpent and he was living on one of the islands, Ramanaka, which is an island of serpents. And there on that island of serpents, sometimes the humans would come and they would make offerings to the serpents so that the serpents would not disturb them. And sometimes the serpents would give some of those offerings to Garuda, because Garuda likes serpents. So then this Kaliya, who was present at that time, he decided that he wanted to take the offerings which were meant for Garuda for himself. And therefore, some conflict ensued between Garuda and Kaliya. And as a result of that conflict, Kaliya was trying to defeat Garuda with his venom, but Garuda being much more powerful, he defeated Kaliya with the strength of his wings, and then Kaliya had to go find some place to take shelter. So he understood that a good place to go and to take shelter was in the lake of the Yamuna, because previously in that lake, Garuda had been cursed by Salbari Rishi that if he were to ever go to that lake, he would immediately die. And that happened, of course, many years previously, when Salbari Rishi was engaged in his long meditation in the water. And he was while engaged in that meditation, Garuda had come and he took from that water a fish from the water. Now for Garuda, and it explains, very carefully explains, for Garuda, he's above all fault. He's an associate of the Lord. He's an elevated Vaishnava, and he eats fish. And And the Salvari Rishi, because he spent so much time there, he was actually feeling a sense of compassion for the fish. And many of the fish were very disturbed when Garuda came and took this fish, huge fish, from the water and ate it. And because Salvari Rishi was relating to them, he was feeling a sense of compassion. He thought he would use his acquisition of mystic powers in an attempt to curse Garuda by stating that if you ever come to this place again where these fish are living, you will immediately die. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that there are three offenses that were committed by Salvari Rishi in this particular instance. One was, it was an offense that he chastised and corrected a superior Vaishnava. And that in itself was an offense. Another offense was that he cursed an associate of the Lord, which was quite a serious offense. And the third offense, it was the third one, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think I have it down here somewhere. Yes, the third offense, it was that he was exhibiting a malicious attitude towards Garuda. We oftentimes say, you know, it's a very, very important point that we oftentimes emphasize, that to have a malicious attitude towards any living being bears consequences. Because all living entities are supposed to be respected. And as Jiva Goswami says, disrespect is to harbor and to engage in a malicious activity towards another living entity with the purposeful intention to cause them pain. So those were three offenses. Chastising a superior, he had a malicious attitude, and he offended a great Vaishnava. So as a result of that offense, by the will of the Lord, or the will of Providence, as a result, what happened to Salvari Rishi is that when he saw these two fish in the water engaged in sex, then his mind became very much attracted. And at that time, he desired that he wanted to marry. And he had heard that there was a king, his name was King Mandhata, who had 50 daughters. So he approached the king and he expressed his desire that he would like to marry one of his daughters because all his daughters were of marriageable age. And the king told Salvari Rishi, well, why don't you approach? And if any of them agree to marry you, they're of marriageable age, then they're welcome to do so. So Salvari Rishi, he had this mystic power. When he looked at himself and said, well, who's going to be attracted to me? He had a very, his body was not very attractive. So he thought that he would make himself to appear like a very nice, handsome courter. And he would go into the palace of the king. He was already given access. And he would wait to see who accepted his proposal, which just so happened that he was so attractive to all 50 of the daughters of King Mandata that they all, 50 of them said, "We'll all be your wife." And he took it, hook, line, and sinker, as the expression goes. I thought it would be appropriate in relationship to fish. So he took it. So he decided to marry all 50 daughters of King Mandata. And because he was a great mystic yogi, he had the power to live in great opulence, and he did. Not only did he live in great opulence with one wife, but he had 50 palaces, and he had the ability to expand and to satisfy all of his wives. That was also part of his mystic yoga process. He expanded to enjoy with them in each and every one of them in 50 palaces. And he was excessively attached as a result of that association. So here we see two offenses committed to Garuda and association. We'll call it bad association. It doesn't have to be bad association. But for him, it was definitely a considerable consequence, considering where he was before, meditating in the water for 10,000 years and approaching liberation as a result of his austerities. If you look at that and you look at the liberation, which was inevitably attainable to him as a result of those austerities, and you compare that to how he was living in 50 palaces and the opulences, and not only that, but very attached, it was definitely a step down. And after some time, what happened to him is that when he realized what was going on, and in this, there are many instances of this in the Bhagavatam. What is that? There's a story of who was that king? I forget the king in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, who was ordered by Lord Brahma to get married. Was it Priyavata? I can't remember. Somehow my memory is failing me. But anyways, he had performed many austerities in the beginning, and then he also, on the order of Lord Brahma, took up married life. Yes, it was Priyavada, the son of Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu, Lord Brahma, and he was also a disciple of Narada Muni. Narada Muni tried to encourage him to become renounced, and Lord Brahma came and said, "No, you have to increase progeny, you have to populate, you should accept a wife, get married." And he also circumstantially became attached. And then later in his life, he said, "Hey, wait a minute. What have I done?" After all those austerities he performed, all the instructions he had received from Narada Muni, at some point later in his life, it all clicked. And then he immediately realized it's time to renounce. The same thing, a similar thing, happened to Salbari Rishi. And in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, the first thing Salbari Rishi says when this hits him, the impact, the full impact of where he was at, when it fully hit him, and I wanted to read these verses because they're instructive. because that's what we're supposed to learn from these examples, because these are personalities who are teaching, be careful by their example. And King Nriga is another one. The details of King Nriga are definitely even more consequences, are even more serious. So the first thing that Sabari Rishi says, he says, alas, while practicing austerity, even within the depths of the water, and while observing all the rules and regulations practiced by saintly persons, I lost the results of my long austerities simply by association with the sexual affairs of fish. Everyone, he says, everyone should observe this fall down and learn from it. So he's saying it himself, please, everybody, look what happened to me. Please learn what can happen to me. And then he goes on. A person desiring liberation from material bondage must give up the association of persons interested in sex life and should not employ his senses externally in seeing, hearing, talking, walking, and so on. One should always stay in a secluded place, completely fixing his mind at the lotus feet of the unlimited personality of Godhead. And if one wants any association at all, he should associate with persons similarly engaged. This is his instructions. If you're going to associate anybody with anybody, you should associate with those whose minds are fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is, right, he's telling the story of what happened to me and how he lost perspective of his austerities and penances and how he fell into association which caused his downfall. Next verse, she says, this is all from the ninth canto. In the beginning, I was alone and engaged in performing the austerities of mystic yoga. But later, because of the association of fish, engaged in sex, I desired to marry. Then I became the husband of 50 wives, and in each of them, I begot 100 sons. And thus, my family increased to 5,000 members. By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in material life. Thus, there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next. In this way, he passed his life in household affairs for some time, but then he became detached from material enjoyment. To renounce material association, he accepted the Vanaprastha order and went to the forest. His devoted wives followed him, for they had no shelter other than their husband. When Salvari Muni, who was quite conversant with the self, went to the forest, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O Maharaj Parikshit, by observing their husband progressing in spiritual existence, Salbhari Muni's wives were also able to enter the spiritual world by his spiritual power, just as the flames of a fire cease when the fire is extinguished. So, Salbhari Rishi is now saying, please try to learn something from all of this. Try to learn something from all this. Of course, as we said, when we think of Sabri Rishi, and the example is often given, that we think of somebody who fell from his position due to his inability to adequately take shelter in devotional service to the Lord. But as we read from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary from the verse Yoga Brashta Vijayate, that what happens to such persons, yogis, who after a very long time, then they actually are able to achieve liberation as a result of their austerities. In Sabri Rishi's case, not only did he achieve liberation, but he achieved a spiritual world as a result of his austerities, because he realized, he renounced everything, and he fixed his consciousness exclusively in meditation upon the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, the Vaikuntha Dutas, or I should say Sanatana Goswami, uses Salvari Rishi as another example comparable to that of Bharata Maharaj, of somebody who says, okay, look at me. Learn something from this. There's something to be learned. And he also gave the example of King Riga. It's very long. The whole story of King Riga is more detailed, actually, already given for Salbari Rishi. But King Riga, essentially, I'll just summarize it, and then I want to get to Krishna's instructions. Because Krishna took advantage of King Riga to give very substantial instructions. In other words, again, King Riga was used as another opportunity to teach. In King Riga's case, his example was used to teach the kingly order about the consequences of usurping the property of Brahmins. And Krishna took the whole event of King Riga to speak very clearly, not only to those who were presently assembled, who were at that time assembled in the presence of King Riga before he returned to wherever it was his next destination, but also to all the Yadava kings, who also displayed at times attachment, pride, attachment to wealth, and he therefore, Krishna, wanted to leave for them some very good instructions, and was using King Riga as that example to teach. Basically, I think I already mentioned it last time, King Riga was found in a well by some of the boys of the Yadu dynasty who were playing at the time. They saw this lizard in the well, and when they saw the lizard in the well, they attempted to take the lizard out. They let down in the well various instruments in order to lift him. It was too difficult for them. And then when Krishna, who was present there, saw their efforts to take the lizard out of the well, Krishna, he reached down into the well, and then with his hand, he simply pulled the lizard out and placed it in front of him. And by the touch of Krishna's hand, this lizard then manifested a form of apparently a great demigod, a very effulgent personality. And Krishna then, although Krishna was all-knowing, Krishna took the position as if he didn't know, and he asked the demigod, you know, who was present before him, you know, who are you? How is it you've had to take this position and this body of a lizard? What is it that you have done? Just by looking at you, it doesn't look to me as you're the kind of person who would commit the kind of sinful activity which would warrant taking birth of a lizard as a lizard. This was Krishna's statements to King Riga, and then King Riga then told his whole history of what happened to him, which I will just briefly summarize. Everyone knows it, that he had mistakenly given a cow to one Brahmin and then taken that cow in charity. It was known that King Nriga was very, very well known universally, was known by the Lord, but known by everyone, that he gave more cows in charity than there was sand on the beach. That was the example was given. In other words, he was very charitably disposed towards kings. And he was well known for being very charitably disposed towards saintly kings. And but mistakenly, one of the cows had come back into his herd, and then he gave a large quantity of cows to another Brahmin, and that cow was given twice. It was found out, it was discovered, King Nriga told the whole story, but he found out that these two Brahmins were arguing amongst themselves that, hey, that cow was given to me, and another Brahmin was saying, hey, no, the cow was given to me, and they were discussing amongst themselves, and King Nriga, hearing their discussion and hearing their concerns, he became very, very bewildered, and therefore he suggested, wait a minute, look, I can take care of this. I will give you the king that who had apparently had taken one of the cows. He said, I'll give you 100,000 cows. Easily I can make up for this one cow. And the king said, no, it's my cow. I want what I got. I'm not interested in your 100,000 cows. And then the other king, who had lost the cow and didn't have the cow at the time, said to King Nriga, even if you give me 100,000 cows and throw another 10,000 cows on top of it, I want my cow back. I'm not interested. So that played out. And then it played out, and because there was nothing he could do. And it was just left at that. And at the time of death, King Nriga was brought before Yamaraj. And as he was standing before Yamaraj, Yamaraj told him, hey, look, I'm fully aware of all of your pious activities, everything that you've done, that distributed your wealth and charity and your qualities. You definitely have a lot of punya, a lot of that will be accomplished and be achieved, but also there were some consequences that you'll have to accept, and for stealing from a Brahmin. So he asked him, you know, which do you want? So King Nigra said, immediately he said, I'll take the results of my sinful activities first. And then, and it's very interesting the way it's described in the Bhagavatam. It was no discussion. It was no like, are you sure? You know, the Yamaraj, like, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes when we engage in such conversations, you know, and we know there may be potential consequences, a well-wisher may think, are you sure that's what you want to do? You know, this. It was just like, fall. That was it. Yamaraj didn't fall. And he was immediately gone. And there he was in the well. Now, of course, he was in the well, and he was waiting for the opportunity to be touched by Krishna. And then, after he told this whole story to Krishna in the presence of the Yadava boys who were present, then he finished his results of his sinful activities, and then he went on to his next destination, which was to accept the result of all of his pious activities. And then Krishna took advantage, and I'm going to read those verses also, which are very instructive. He said, oh, also there's one other good point I forgot to mention about it. In the case of King Nriga, King Nriga also said that he was very, very eager to see the Lord. That was another consideration. He was very, very eager to see the Lord. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains what prompted that eagerness in him to see the Lord. And what prompted that eagerness in him to see the Lord was that he was so charitably disposed that he had given charity to one king. This king, who was a devotee, he wanted to build a temple for a beautiful deity of Govinda and obtain scriptures like the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Being very generous, Nriga readily supplied these things to the king. He was a devotee. And then the king said, I give blessings that you may see the Lord. And from that time on, Nriga had a great desire to see the Lord. So that was the catalyst, his association with a devotee. And the devotee king gave him that blessing also, by which he was able to see the Lord. So here's Krishna's instructions to Yadava boys and to kings, and also the kings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, who was especially devoted to the Brahmins and who embodies the essence of religion, then spoke to his personal associates and thus instructed the royal class in general. Lord Krishna said, how indigestible is the property of a Brahmin. Even when enjoyed just slightly and by one more potent than fire, what then to speak of kings who try to enjoy it, presuming themselves lords? I do not consider halahala to be real poison because it has an antidote. But a Brahmin's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in this world. Krishna said, Shiva could digest the halahala poison, so that was not real poison. But there is no antidote for stealing from the Brahmin. Krishna said, even taking poison is preferable to taking a Brahmin's property, because poison only destroys the drinker. If a person enjoys a Brahmin's property without receiving due permission, that property destroys three generations of his family. But if he takes it by force or gets the government or other outsiders to help him usurp it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed. Members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, fail to foresee their own downfall, childishly hankering to enjoy a Brahmin's property, they are actually hankering to go to hell. For as many years as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of generous Brahmins who have dependent families and whose property is stolen, uncontrolled kings who usurp a Brahmin's property are cooked, along with their royal families, in the hell known as Kumbhipaka. Sorry, this is Krishna. His own words. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a Brahmin's property will take birth as a worm in feces for 60,000 years. I do not desire Brahman's wealth. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahman harshly, even if he has sinned, even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you. Always continue to offer him obeisances. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmins, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. When a Brahmin's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the Brahmin's cow did to Nriga. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all the worlds, entered his palace. So, hearing these examples, Gopakumara was thinking, his little, as we read in today's verse, see, if such personalities have to undergo such consequences and such obstacles are there even for those who are engaged in Nam Sankirtan, as they were, because it's described, they were engaged in Nam Sankirtan, they accepted these obstacles to teach, and he became a little bit worried. And what hope do I have? What hope do I have? You know, it's this, and therefore, the Vaikuntha Dutas were giving their assurances, don't worry, anyone who takes shelter of Nam Sankirtan, there's hope. By the power, it will eradicate, as they already previously explained, it will eradicate all reactions, not only reactions of the past, but even by the strength of Nam Sankirtan, it can eradicate even the Prarabdha karma that which one has to experience in this life, and even those who have to accept Prarabdha karma in this life, who may not have sincerely chanted the holy name, they may have done so out of jest, or they may have done so unknowingly. They'll also be released from their sinful reactions. They may have to accept the Prarabdha karma in this life, but by the suffering that they experience in this life, their Prarabdha karma will be depleted to nil as a result of taking shelter of the holy name of the Lord. All of this evidence was given previously. And the Vaikuntha Dutas are simply reminding Gopakumara, don't worry. Don't worry. Take shelter in Hari Nam Sankirtan. And by the strength of the holy name, we will help you. And if you have any questions philosophically, we'll help you overcome those obstacles. Even you, even without us, got so much help already and overcame obstacles which were thrown before you. When you were on Tapaloka and Pipalaya Rishi said to you, hey, what are you doing? Why are you trying to see the Lord here? Don't you know everyone here sees the Lord within? It's more important to see the Lord within the heart, because without the heart, you can't see anyways. So better to go in the heart. And so many arguments Pipalaya Rishi was giving to Gopakumara, a potential obstacle which may have swayed him or which may have distracted him from getting to this point where Harinam Sankirtan and the association of the Vaikuntha Dutas were going to enlighten him that this is the best, most powerful, better than any meditation. Not only that, but if you engage in Nam Sankirtan and if you hear the glories of the Lord in the association of the devotees who are expanding the glories of the Lord, you will certainly achieve the desired destination of your meditation, no obstacles will all be, they will all be removed. All be removed. And we're here to help you. We're here to help you. This is how, of course, Gopa Kumara was hesitating, having some doubts, having heard all of these obstacles. But then now the Vaikuntha Dutas are going to put him on the right track again and give him all assurances. And then in verses to come, more evidence will be there. That's our class for today. And try to connect it to Harinam Sankirtan. Try to connect it to helping us understand some consequences that we can learn from persons who are there in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam to show us, who accepted those consequences, to show us what are the consequences of bad association. And because they did it for us, not only to teach, as we said before, sometimes we need examples of devotees who achieved perfection, we're situated in the platform of unalloyed devotional service. Of course, we do need that example. But in their case, they taught even how to live like a civilized human being so you can gradually get there. So you can just gradually get there. In the case of Bharat Maharaj, King Riga, and Salbari Rishi. That's their instructions were given for that purpose. And something to be learned by these examples. There was one other point I was going to make, but it escaped me. So I think I'll stop here. And I guess we'll chant some japa together. Next class, I'll just say it now. Next class will be on Monday, which is also Balaram Jayanti. But unfortunately, it will have to be a short class. And I have another commitment almost immediately after class on Monday. I've made a commitment to be interviewed for the Ministry of Cow Protection. And there's going to be an interview about the development of a website which I took part in, and they're going to guess. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's practically immediately after the Monday class. I can't go longer on Monday. I have to end early, so it won't be a long class on Monday. If there are other Balaram Jayanti classes you have access to that may be potentially longer, by all means, you should hear from them. But I will speak probably at least a half hour on Monday about Lord Balaram, and then we'll chant japa together on Monday for those who take part. For today, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we will end here. Thank you very much for taking part. And we'll see you. Is something wrong? So I'm hearing some echo. Raj Kumar is not here, so I have no one to control the situation here. I have no idea what I'm doing. So we'll end here. No announcements. I've already made an announcement Monday. Is Balaram Jayanti, and we'll be speaking about Lord Balaram. Oh, yes, okay. I know what that hand is. Thank you, Dina Garanga. I have an announcement. Dina Garanga happens to be on the front, so I'm able to see him. I have an announcement. Everybody, if you can please hear a request from Dina Garanga. I hope. Let me see. You sent it to me? Where did you send it?
Via WhatsApp.
Huh?
Via WhatsApp.
What's up? Okay. Okay. What's up? All right. I will read it. This is an announcement for the devotees who are accustomed to going to my website. Or even if you're not accustomed, if you have some website skills, that may also be a good reason to participate. Announcement. Dear devotees, this is from Dina Gauranga. Please accept our humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. After a really long wait, we have finished developing a new website and are currently looking for devotees to help us test. Ideal candidates would be someone with prior experience of testing websites or with some IT computer experience and have access to a computer, tablet, or smartphone. For the first round of testing, we are looking for 3 English-speaking disciples and 3 English-speaking aspiring disciples, 3 Russian-speaking disciples, and 3 Russian-speaking aspiring disciples. I guess that announcement will have to come tomorrow for the Russians, although there may be some Russian-speaking disciples here. Yes, there are some Russian-speaking. So that's 3 English-speaking disciples, 3 English-speaking aspiring disciples, 3 Russian-speaking disciples, and 3 Russian-speaking aspiring disciples. We would like to clarify that the ask for disciples and aspiring disciples has to do with testing certain functionality of the website and nothing else. We'll be adding non-disciples as part of the second round of testing. Please get in touch with Dina Gauranga Das. Can you please put your email, Dina Gauranga? Or have you already put it in the chat? Put your email in the chat. If anybody wishes and qualifies, then contact. There is the email address, Dina Gauranga, dgd.nrs@gmail.com. It's in the chat session. So please get in touch with Dina Gauranga Das at that address to sign up for testing. Devotees who have been shortlisted will receive an email with further instructions. Thank you, your servants, website administrators. That's the announcement. Dina Gauranga, can you unmute? When is this required? Immediately?
We'll start testing midweek, so maybe Wednesday or Thursday.
Wednesday and Thursday testing will start, so contact sometime before that. Okay. That's it. Thank you very much. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.